everybody. Thank you for joining us today for our latest episode of Diversity Inside Lacrosse with Nation United. To start it off, we're bringing in Matt Liberman, staff writer for the Daily Orange. We also have Jeremy Audrey, the executive director of the Nation United Foundation. And today we're going to discuss an article, a very important article, titled Inside the Lack of Racial Diversity in Lacrosse. Matt, can you go ahead and introduce yourself to the listeners and tell us a little bit about why you ended up writing this article?
I'm Matt Liberman. I'm a senior at Syracuse University and a staff writer for the Daily Orange. I'll be graduating next weekend. And
big congratulations. We don't want to let that just float by, Matt.
Absolutely.
Big hand clap for you.
Thank you. I appreciate it. This story is something that I know I've wanted to write for pretty close to a year now, because I remember I was looking at the Syracuse lineup, and I know that this is the first year in pretty good while. I think it's all nearing in on a decade in which Syracuse has had more than one African-American player on the lacrosse team. I'm pretty sure the last time that they had more than one was when Hakeem Lucky and Drew Jenkins were here back in 2013. And so originally it's something that I wanted to write from a Syracuse perspective. But as I looked around and I looked at the rest of the ACC and then looked at the rest of the NCAA, I saw that the numbers really hadn't changed all that much in the last 10 years. And that's something that I really wanted to dig deeper into and say, when you look at some of the other sports across the NCAA, they are changing. Why aren't they in lacrosse?
Did you come across any surprises? Things that you hadn't known or hadn't thought of?
I think the thing that was most surprising was that I really wasn't surprised by a lot of what I heard. I felt that I should have been surprised by how bad some of the experiences were. But at the end of the day, I really wasn't all that surprised, because one of the things that people shared within this story, and it's true, is that lacrosse is really a mirror of where this country is currently at. And so you look on the news every single day and you see some really, really horrific and egregious things happening to people of color across the United States, and it's no different within lacrosse.
So, Matt, this is Jeremy. With regards to how writing the story affected you, what was most impactful?
I think really listening to some of the anecdotes from some of the people within the game that I talked to. One of them in particular, Chaz Woodson, one of the things that he said was that in college, somebody called him the N-word on the field, and he felt that he couldn't retaliate, because if anything was to go public about that, it wouldn't be the fact that he was called a racial slur. It's the fact that he would be viewed as an angry African-American college kid attacking somebody that's white. And so when you look at lacrosse right now, I can list off all the numbers in the world. People won't remember that. They'll remember an example or an anecdote like the one that Chaz had to deal with. They'll remember the fact that Jovan Miller was in lines with a player who they were getting ready to shake hands, and this specific player that had been pestering Jovan all game told his dad to, quote, shut his black ass up.
Yeah.
Those are the stories that will stick with people. Those are the ones that they'll remember, and they'll say, oh my God, what is wrong with people? What is wrong with people within this community? How can we change it? How can we progress forward to make sure that things like this aren't happening? Because clearly, just listing off the numbers isn't doing so.
Wow. Thank you for that. You know, Jeremy, before I hand it back to you, I want to ask Matt something else. I you know, happen to know that in addition to interviewing Chaz, one of the Nation United co-founders and our coaching director, you also interviewed a couple of Nation United players. I believe you had a conversation with Nate McPeak. And on the flip side of things, there were some positive experiences that he had to share. Can you talk to those a bit?
Yeah, so when I talked to Nate, one of the biggest things that he emphasizes, he went back to this one team dinner that Nation United had, and people were going around and they were sharing some of their experiences, and one of the things that they were doing is they're going around and they're saying what some of those experiences were like, perhaps as the only person of color on their lacrosse teams in their respective clubs or their respective towns. And one of the things that Nate really emphasized is that this is amazing because now they're not that. They feel some sort of, they feel more free than they did in other communities. They feel that they can be themselves, and they felt finally that they were welcome. It wasn't necessarily that they had felt terribly before in their communities, but they didn't feel like they could necessarily always be themselves, and now they did. And that this really showed an example of what a team within this sport could look like, where people feel welcome and they feel that they can be a part of a team.
What came out of the discussions that you had that you think people will see as potential ways to address some of the challenges that we're talking about and that you heard about while you were writing this story?
I think the biggest thing would be education. I know that U.S. Lacrosse and partnering with people like Chaz and Kyle Harrison and Jovan, I know that they recently came out with a cultural competency course that basically addresses some of those things, addresses some of these implicit biases that people have within not only just the lacrosse community, but just society as well. Some of the microaggressions that people don't realize that they're saying on a daily basis, but they are. And if this course can be widespread, if this is something that every single person that plays this game or coaches this game has to take, then I think that we'll see an entirely different community. If you can't go onto a lacrosse field and know that perhaps what you're saying is a Jim Crow slur, you should not be on that lacrosse field.
Absolutely.
What do you have to say to parents of non-players of color? Well, you know, how can they personally pitch in?
In looking at parents of non-players of color, it's the education falls on them as well. Jovan Miller had an example where he was coaching at a camp and there was like an 11 or 12-year-old white boy that asked if he was from the hood because he was wearing a gold chain. That means that kid grew up in an environment, in a household, where the parents either endorsed that sort of comment or they educated that kid in some way to not realize what he's saying is wrong. If you're looking at parents across the lacrosse community as a whole, you need to check that character. And if you can't check that character, somebody has to check that character for you. You need to teach yourself what's right and what's wrong. Because at the end of the day, when you're looking at kids across this community or around the country, they're ultimately influenced by what their parents do and say. So if you have that influence, make sure you use it in a good way. A lot of what my parents instilled in me is still very much in control of my life. And I grew up in a Jewish household, and I don't think I have to go into the entire fact of being Jewish for people to understand what maybe I've encountered in my life and what my parents have encountered in their lives, and just that being different really opens your eyes to how other people may experience the world. And so the problem with lacrosse right now is that you're looking at a lot of these parents and they just don't have those differences.
Yeah, you're right. I think sometimes we just aren't forced to think outside of the box in terms of making sure that you address individuals in a certain way that's respectful. And I think that's where we are with lacrosse. But the difference is now you have a ton of people, I believe, who are willing to stand up and say something about what they're seeing, what they're hearing, what their children are feeling. And to Jovan Miller's point, you know, even what their parents are feeling, you know, for someone to tell someone's parent that same thing happened to me. The young man was escorted off the field. He was kicked out of the game. That type of response to what I would consider bad behavior is the right response because there's no place for it. So with that being said, with all that you kind of uncovered and the numbers pointing to what they're pointing to, why should families or parents encourage their kids to continue to play the sport of lacrosse?
Lacrosse, like any other sport that's played at the collegiate level, can open a lot of doors. It doesn't matter that lacrosse perhaps isn't the highest paying professional sport out there. If you play at the Division I level or even at the D2 or D3 level, lacrosse is a small enough community where networks open and it can open doors for you where maybe somebody didn't previously think it could. I think that just the opportunity that lacrosse can give you, if you're good enough to play lacrosse and you can go out and you can earn a scholarship or you can earn preferred walk-on spot somewhere and you can generate a name for yourself and make those connections, I think it will certainly help.
Well, thank you, Matt. Thank you, Jeremy. Everybody that's listening, please make sure you go. If you haven't, make sure you go download the article. You read it. You share it. And you contribute to the cause. Stay tuned. We will be following up with the rest of our parents' perspective, starting with an interview with Miles Harrison, the founder of the Seminole Morgan State 10 Bears lacrosse program, also known as the father of Kyle Harrison. We'll also have a parent panel with Colby Henry, who is the father of two Nation United players, Carter Henry, who is committed to play at Yale, and Cam Henry, who will be going off to contribute to the Blue Devils next year. We also have Jeremy as part of that panel, and he's discussing the parents' perspective as being the parent of Sterling Audrey, who plays for Hofstra, and we are excited to say has received honors of being selected for the all-rookie team. And he is also the father of Kim Audrey, who is a Lindenwood commit and will be going off to play there in a couple of years. We have Daniela Rendon, who is the mother of Chloe Hunter, also a Nation United ambassador, who is committed to go to UPenn. So stay tuned. I hope you enjoy the rest of our episode. And again, thank you, Jeremy, and thank you, Matt.
And the Diversity Inside Lacrosse podcast with Nation United continues with Dr. Miles Harrison, one of the most famous lacrosse dads in the entire sport, also a famous lacrosse player himself. Dr. Harrison, it's really a pleasure to speak with you on the Diversity Inside Lacrosse podcast. You and I have gotten a chance to know each other really well over more than a decade and a half, and this is a fun conversation to have this time of year. Mother's Day is right around the corner. Father's Day is not too far beyond that. And on the heels of conversations about things like mental health in the sport, now feels like a good time to celebrate and learn more about what it means to be the parent of a minority lacrosse player, what that experience is like, and how we can develop a community in which folks support one another and understand what the shared experiences are. So I'm coming to this conversation very mindful of the conversation that I had with Kyle last year about what it's like for him to potentially become a lacrosse dad and what his relationship with you was like. And so whereas I might ask some lacrosse parents how you got into the sport, I think a lot of folks know your story as a player. But beyond that, what was it like to carry the sport into adulthood, knowing what it meant for you, and then as you had children, giving them the game?
Well, Terry, it's always good talking to you, and this is a topic that you're aware is close to my heart. The interesting contrast about my experience and then Kyle's subsequent experience is the fact that as I entered the sport at the recommendation of a high school football coach after coaching me in the 10th grade and introducing me to lacrosse at that time, I was actually well aware of how much of a minority I was. There was one other person of color on the lacrosse team the first year. By my senior year, there were six of us. But having said that, as I progressed from that high school experience in the 1960s, and I want people to hear the years I'm talking about, into the Morgan College experience, America's most prominent problem, and that is race relations, in my opinion, were quite different at the point at which I was coming through. I successfully navigated both those times, both in high school and at Morgan, with the problems that it brought. And if we want to go into details about that, I'll be happy to. And so I was well aware of my duty, as Kyle recognized by looking at, I was very fortunate, many pictures were taken of me at my college playing level. And as he looked at those pictures and kind of wanted to emulate that, now that he had a lacrosse stick in his hand as early as lower school, third and fourth grade, I was aware of the kinds of things I thought I would need to do to make his experience less racially charged, and mine was at some points. And again, I do want some questions about that so you can hear. It's not a Jackie Robinson experience. I don't want anybody to think things were that aggressive. But nevertheless, it let me know that I wanted to protect my son. And so his impression after coming through club lacrosse and then high school lacrosse at an institution like Friends School, which is a Quaker education and one of the most nurturing environments, in my opinion, that a student athlete could be in, he never really felt the kind of angst that we felt going into the sport at which the point we did. So he really kind of had to grow into recognizing, even when he was at odds with the general population's thought process, I'll put it that way. And to give you an example, at club level, clearly one of the better midfielders on that field, if not the best, never really started, got placed in at very interesting times, extra man, and understood that. But again, not really being used for his full skill set at that point. And it actually took some conversations with myself and coaches to make them understand that, you know, let's do this thing fair, or we're not going to do it at all. So that's the reality of it. I shielded him from a lot of the things that now allows him to question, now that we've had all these other racially charged, or at least allegations of racially charged incidents, to make him start to question something that he never questioned as he came through as a young student athlete in lacrosse.
So he's spoken about that at length as well. And I guess one thing I'm interested in, and are, if you had to do it all over again, would you do it similarly? Are you glad that he's gone through the exploration or discovery process on the timeline that he has?
The latter part of your question changed the answer. I was about to answer on the timeline that he has. I wish he had recognized some of these things a little earlier. I think Kyle's level of accomplishment and the level of buy-in of coaches, fans, alumni, and all those kinds of things continue to keep his glasses rose-colored, if that makes sense to you, and I'm sure it does. And so I wish that he had been able to see some of the reality of the sport that he was in a little earlier, but I think his accomplishment level really kind of kept that from him. And so when he finally did get to the point of recognizing what was going on, he had assumed other titles that helped boys turn into men. And one was husband and father. The way he started looking at the world was quite influenced by getting married. It's an interracial marriage, in addition by having children. So some of the things that he didn't reflect on deeply prior to those latter day experiences, if you will, forced him to start reflecting deeply on that. And I think he's come full circle, understands it, and that's why he raised the question to you, or you, after you raised the question to him, he stated back to you he wasn't sure that he wanted his kids to be involved at this point, because he's still evolving his thought process about it. Most assuredly, he would love to see his children be student athletes. That was not the statement. The statement was, does he want them to be involved in something that could create pain? But pain creates growth, because it makes you examine your environment. So I think his thought process will evolve, and we will see that. And he's vocal, as you know. We'll see it as it goes.
Of course. So opening up the conversation a little bit, one of the things that I'm fascinated by is being a lacrosse parent is a communal experience. You stand by other lacrosse parents on the sidelines. You develop friendships. You share experiences. What's it like navigating that process? And what was it like navigating that process for you, particularly because you were probably had a minority experience in a lot of regards, including the fact that I would imagine a lot of Kyle's teammates in middle school and high school, their parents didn't play lacrosse. They weren't familiar with the game. They didn't have friends who they could talk about lacrosse at a high level with. They didn't even know how to throw and catch, most likely. So what was it like being a lacrosse parent alongside all the other lacrosse parents?
It was wonderful. Needless to say, I had loved what went on with me in high school and at Morgan with regard to lacrosse, but I was estranged from it. I went to a very very intense academic situation. I went to medical school as I finished playing lacrosse at Morgan. And so there was a time period where it was not in my consciousness. It just was not. Kyle wasn't born yet. It was not in my consciousness for many, many years. And so to actually have him take to the sport as early as he did, as I said, in lower school at Friends, he got interested in wanting to play. And so to see that and to kind of bring me back into my awareness of how much the game meant to me. We can go about talking about being the creator's game and things of that nature. I made a quote one time that lacrosse is quite different than football and other sports that I played. It is a family sport. Rarely will you see an individual participating in lacrosse. It is invariably a family bringing their student athlete into the situation and remaining there. So I had already had that experience at the school level with Kyle, and that was a very, very positive experience, very nurturing, as I said. A Quaker education is amazing. It's utterly amazing in terms of its building of character of kids, in addition to teaching them the didactic things that school must. So it was great at Friends. I had a lacrosse connection right away with one of his coaches. One of his coaches was a roommate at Ohio Wesleyan with a guy I played in the North-South All-Star game with. So all of a sudden, I was back in the game, and it was the most wonderful feeling I've ever had. I've articulated to you that those 4 years at Hopkins for Kyle were utterly magical for my wife and myself. It was beyond anything that I could have ever imagined. I knew that he was one of the best lacrosse players that I had the pleasure of being up close to and being right there in my household. But things did not necessarily have to play out like they did. And they did. I think the correct institution was chosen. Petra Mala was the correct coach for my boy at that time in his life. And Kyle exercised the skill level that I knew he had, which doesn't necessarily have to happen. You got a lot of guys who have a lot of skills that for whatever reason, because of the coaching style and or the style of the team that they arrived at, does not allow them to play out their skill level. And all of that happened. I felt like if Nirvana is any better, I'm not sure I could tolerate it. So there you go. I get emotional, Kerry, when I think about it. So I would hope that covered what you wanted.
Of course. The one other thing I do want to touch on, though, is that I'm sure that it wasn't all roses. And I'm sure that as the parent of any athlete has experienced, you had those quiet car rides home after a loss, or I don't know if you ever talked about quitting and you had to talk him out of it or whatever else the situation might have been. So when you think about being on the side of struggle and sacrifice and trying to do right by what comes next, what are some of the memories that stand out?
Okay, so in those trips after, maybe not such a victorious day. That's what I thought I heard.
Sure.
Is that right?
Yep.
Yeah. Well, needless to say, the whole idea of team sports has a whole lot to teach an individual about being a fully accomplished human being. And I often tell my medical students, residents in the latter part of my life, and athletes in the early part of my life, that I learned so much more from my defeats than I did from my victories. Often with the endorphins that our body produces when we have a victory, it's all that gets, the reflectiveness of that gets smothered by the joy of it. Whereas the reflectiveness of a defeat allows one to talk about sportsmanship and priorities in life. You know, you just lost one lacrosse game. You just lost one soccer game. You just lost one basketball. He was a free sport athlete. You know that. And so I had these teaching moments in all of his sports. Fortunately, he rose to the top of them all. And so his personal experiences were positive enough that the reflection on those was often to say, you know what? It's not always going to be roses. You're not always going to be first-team MIAA. You're not always going to be, you know, high school All-American in lacrosse. Those were moments where, even using accomplishment, I was able to describe, you know, there are subjective decisions made about awards. And you may be the guy, and we experienced that once in high school, won't go through it. You may be the guy who should have gotten that award. But whenever there's subjectivity, there may not be, the outcome may not be what you think. And we can't always play the race card when that's the case. So those were very, very important teachable moments. And those, it's interesting you brought up the rides home, because that was not only me talking to him as a former athlete, but Mom. And Wanda Harrison, I will tell you, you're looking at Wanda Harrison with athletic ability when you look at son, at my son. He makes decisions like my wife. He is, equanimity under duress is the way I describe my wife. A surgeon that I respected for many years, was described as showing equanimity under duress. And he said that to me. And I've said it to everybody who can handle these very tough situations and look like it's a walk in the park. And, you've seen my boy do some things like that. That came directly from his mom.
So, as we wind down the conversation, one of the things that it seems like we need to touch on is a little bit of a different issue, which is the opportunity of being a lacrosse grandfather. And, right. You know, we talked about how that road hasn't necessarily started yet, but what do you imagine when you think about what it might be if it does?
Wow. Well, I made the comment before, If I get to do this wonder years like I did with Kyle, I probably couldn't tolerate the nirvana of that. I think about that every time I'm with my grandchildren, and I think about it both with my granddaughter, who's the oldest at 4, and my grandson, who's just about to be 2. I understand the hurdles that are right now causing Kyle some consternation, the realities, I won't call them hurdles, the realities that are causing Kyle some consternation. But I do believe his accomplishment, his understanding of the world we live in, and his willingness with things like we're doing right now to try to change those things will change his mind about his children being involved, because they could too be an effective change agent down the line. And by not allowing them to participate, I think he's going to arrive at, that's kind of walking away from what we need to do in order to bring about a more equitable and diverse environment. Those of us who have accomplished and understand have got to stand strong and continue to do that. Right now, it's the dad, which is the overwhelming influence in his life right now. Second time dad, but very close to those events. He is thinking about the protection of his children. As they grow, as he grows, he's going to realize he's on the front line still, and they are, if they choose to play that sport, they are obliged to continue our legacy.
Well, I think that's a perfect place to end, because it speaks directly to both what a podcast like this is meant to accomplish, a discussion around why and how, and then also I think it speaks to what this particular topic is, which is the relationship between parents and children and what you try to do for them, which is, you know, help them become the best people that they can be and help create an environment that's not only going to facilitate that, but also given the opportunity to accomplish all of their goals. So with that, Dr. Harrison, I want to once again thank you for your participation and time on the Diversity Inside Lacrosse podcast with Nation United, and we'll be back with a panel discussion.
Thanks so very much, Terry. I've always enjoyed talking to you.
And the Diversity Inside Lacrosse podcast with Nation United continues with a trio of parents around whom we're going to have the conversation I'm really excited about in terms of understanding what it's like to see your child grow and develop in this sport and all of the things that every mom and dad wants to do in order to support his or her son or daughter in becoming the best player they can. And so to hear that, we have Kobe Henry, whose sons Cameron and Carter are committed to play lacrosse at Duke and Yale, respectively. Daniela Rendon, whose daughter Chloe Hunter is going to play lacrosse at Penn. And Jeremy Ardrey, my right-hand man and wingman on these podcasts, whose son Sterling just finished his freshman year at Hofstra and whose daughter Kim will play at Lindenwood next year. Thank each of you for joining us. And Kobe, I kind of want to start with you. What was it like seeing lacrosse for the first time? Did you grow up with it, or were your son's first experience your introduction to the game?
Yeah, so, you know, as I grew up in the South, so lacrosse wasn't down there. I used to see it occasionally on the Wild World of Sports. And, you know, for my boys, they were never exposed to it until we actually came to Atlanta. And definitely a sport that was beginning to grow around here, things of that sort. And from there, I learned the sport along with my boys. I was one of their first coaches, but, you know, me, I used to watch a couple of videos, things of that sort, try to learn some practice techniques, things that around that, learn some things around the game, the rules, things of that sort, and then they jumped into it and loved it.
And Daniela, a similar question for you, except in addition to your own personal exposure and learning about the game, you know, what was it like trying to help and support your daughter as she learned the basics?
Yeah, first off, thank you for having me. So Chloe quit, she was a competitive gymnastics, quit in the beginning of seventh grade and around when lacrosse season was going to start, actually, and a friend was trying it. I had never seen the sport before. I mean, we're in Houston, Texas. Not very many people know about it. You can't have a general conversation with somebody at the grocery store about it. So she picked up the sport, and I remember the first game, the coach had to, like, grab her by the shoulders and physically put her in her spot and said, just kind of run back and forth here, you know? So that's how we were first introduced to the sport. Since then, it's just been... it's gone by so fast from the sense of just trying to catch up. She knew she loved it by the end of that first season, and she knew she wanted to play club. So somebody approached us and said, hey, we have a club team. Does she want to play on it? And it was an absolute yes. And then we really started realizing how big this sport is on the East Coast, how you have to travel. We traveled. We really opened our eyes to, it really opened our eyes to, like, how the game's played and kind of like where she stood. She was so new at it and didn't know much, and that kind of fueled her to work harder, get better. I would say just coaches investing in her and making sure that she was getting the right training that she needed really helped her catch up over the years. So that was our introduction to it.
Perfect. And Jeremy, I know, you know, you and I have had this conversation. I'm pretty sure you had a kind of a similar story, but you also had an athletic background, and I'm really fascinated by parents who want to help their child get better, but, you know, may or may not know how to throw a lacrosse ball themselves out of a stick. And so, you know, you bring out the baseball mitt to catch it when play catch with your, you know, son or daughter when they're playing with their lacrosse stick. What was that like for you?
That's a good question. I'd have to agree with both Daniela and Kobe in that, you know, I'd never picked up a lacrosse stick, even though I had a nephew who lived in Mount Pleasant, South Carolina, just outside of Charleston, who was playing with a club team there. I think it was Top Left. And that was really, you know, Sterling and Kim's first introduction to the sport. It wasn't until Sterling came home from school and said someone came to the school and talked to them about lacrosse and asked if Sterling wanted to play. And before, of course, as you mentioned, you know, I played football growing up. I ran track, and Sterling, you know, kind of followed that course early on. Kim did gymnastics. But when they mentioned, you know, that Sterling might have an opportunity to play lacrosse, he was genuinely excited about it because his older cousin was playing, and he felt like, hey, look, this is something that I can do that Chase is also doing. And it forced me, because, you know, I wanted to be a part of everything that they were doing, to figure out, you know, how I could at least fake it till I make it on the sidelines as a coach. And so usually I stuck to, you know, running drills and not necessarily showing them how to do it, but telling them, hey, look, this is what you need to do. And then having one of the other kids to actually pick up a stick and show them. And then over time, you know, the more Sterling and Kim played, the more I got comfortable with a stick. And it really did become one of those things that we enjoy, just like we enjoy going out and throwing the football. We enjoy going out and, you know, having them laugh at me, you know, try to catch and pass a ball. And over time, I just got a little bit better at it. But that was our story. And then the other thing that I will state is, you know, in all honesty, if it wasn't for, you know, the U.S. lacrosse first sticks program, they wouldn't have been able to play, because all the programs in the Charlotte area were, at the time, they were relatively expensive. And I wasn't real big on experimenting at such a high price or cost. And so the first sticks program allowed us to give them the opportunity to figure out whether or not they really liked it before we actually had to make, you know, a substantial investment in them playing on a team.
It's a really great point, because it's certainly a significant barrier to entry for a lot of folks, particularly in places where you can't just borrow something in order to give it a shot. What about in the early days of their involvement? Or even, you know, maybe not so early days, was there ever a moment, Jeremy, where you wished Sterling or Kim hadn't gotten involved?
If I'm being completely honest, no. You know, I grew up on the west side of Charlotte, which is not, you know, the same as the west side of some other metropolitan cities, but it was a rough part of town at times, just depending on where you were and when you were there. And our kids, you know, they didn't have to experience that. Sterling and Kim didn't have to experience certain things that I had to experience growing up, which forced me to, you know, to have to make decisions, you know, adult decisions early on in my life. And I looked at some of the challenges. For example, you know, when, you know, the N-word may have been used, or when, you know, they may have felt like they were isolated on a team, and maybe the team members or the coaches didn't really relate to them or didn't understand them. Not that they didn't care, they just didn't respond the way that, you know, I may have responded to them or whatever. It was an opportunity for us to really kind of take a step back and look at how they really wanted to deal with the situations, even though in the beginning, like, for example, there was a scenario where, you know, Sterling was called the N-word, you know, and he at that time, he was able to deal with the first one, but if it happened, and you know, and he would tell the referee, and if the referee didn't do anything and it happened again, it usually became a situation where he was ejected from the game. Well, not ejected, but, you know, he had to sit on the sideline for a couple of minutes, or, you know, because the kid ended up on the ground, or he chose to deal with it physically. And so we tried to use those as life lessons to help him understand that, hey, you know, wherever you go, there are going to be individuals who may not, you know, use the proper decorum. They may be ignorant They may just be flat out disrespectful. And you're going to have to learn how to deal with those things in a positive way. You're going to have to learn how to use that as fuel to help make you better as a person and also as a lacrosse player. And he responded to that. Kim didn't have to deal with those things as much. She just had to deal with some of the other things that in most instances were just relative to being, you know, around a group of girls. And she was able to deal with those things. But Sterling, he was challenged initially, and we spent a lot of time just kind of talking through, you know, how to respond or how to react in a way that will push you forward in the game. And so I can't say that I wished that they weren't in a sport. Thus, we're still playing the sport and doing the things that we're doing right now, for example, with Nation United and even this podcast. The goal is to try to help make the sport the best that it can be for the future, not for the right now or for the past. But as the sport becomes more diverse, you know, there are certain things that need to happen, right? So,
Daniela, you mentioned that it was pretty clear pretty quickly that Chloe wanted to play club lacrosse and how that experience was so eye-opening. What was it like making friends among, you know, the other parents on your daughter's teams, and what it was like to learn a little bit more about how unique the lacrosse community is as a group?
Yeah, I mean, when I look back at our seventh grade or her seventh grade year and starting lacrosse, we have a bit of a different situation in the sense that we're in inner city Houston. It's, I think, either the second or third most diverse city in the country. So the school that she went to is extremely diverse, over, you know, 80 languages spoken in that school, and that's where the lacrosse team fed from. So it was a very diverse group of kids. And all that was great, right? But then when I started noticing the differences is when we started playing suburb schools. So that's kind of where you realized, oh, wait, we're actually, our makeup is extremely different than what we're seeing in our opponent's makeup or in those teams. So personally, there wasn't a lot of, it wasn't hard to make friends with the parents or with the kids within our team. I think once we started club, initially I just couldn't personally relate to a lot of people. Then getting to know folks, of course, just like in any other situation, it became a lot easier. But I would say initially when I think of the sport, we kind of had the bliss of not knowing what the sport was, not really knowing that it comes from that its background, you know, that as far as not just East Coast, but it's a, you know, it's a sport that people of upper income predominantly play. So we didn't know all of those things, which I think made it a lot easier as far as just that was not something we had to think about at the time. And then by the time we started realizing those things, she was sold. She was like, this is for me. I love this. So that was kind of our experience. I would say even today, the private school that she's in now has, last year or 2 years ago, it had four girls of color on the lacrosse team. And then right now she has, there's three of them on the lacrosse team. So we're a little bit unique in that sense. And I think she's been very fortunate to have that. But in general, it's very obvious. So a teammate of hers that she actually, I was telling Jeremy this the other day, teammate of hers that from basketball that she recruited to play lacrosse, a freshman. This year she's trying lacrosse for the first year. Her parents came up to me and said, oh my gosh, she loves it. This is amazing. Like, I think she loves it more than basketball, you know, and basketball was her thing. So Chloe was touching base with her, the little girls on JV, and Chloe was touching base with her in the locker room and just like, how's it going? You know, are you loving it? Da, da, da. And the little girl said, oh my gosh, I love it, except that I was called the N-word the other day in the game. She's like, I think she was just mad because I took the ball from her. So, she, you know, the little girl chalked it up as that. but it kind of stayed with Chloe, and she felt this sense of responsibility to not just let that be, right? That's her first and only situation within lacrosse where she's dealt with race really being an issue. Fortunately, Chloe knew the head coach very well on the other team and texted her and said, hey, this girl's trying it out for the first time. I hate that this is her experience. You know, she's like 2 months into knowing this sport. You know, this was said to her. What can we do to make sure that it doesn't happen again? And I think through that communication, through, you know, Chloe taking responsibility and ownership, we will progress in that sense, right? So when I think of this sport and what we do next and how we can grow it from a diversity standpoint, I think it's people taking true ownership and not just sympathizing with situations like, you know, like that freshman's, but really taking responsibility and seeing what they can do to improve in general the situation that is in front of them, or, you know, just the tolerance level.
Kobe, your sons have been, I would say, you know, pretty forward in terms of their willingness to tell their stories, share their experiences. I have kind of a two-sided question. The first is, how did that come to be? And the second is, do you think it's fair that they even feel the need to have to bear the burden of telling their story as if it is unique within the sport and within the community?
Yeah. So, with them, you know, we've always kind of taught them to know that you're in a very unique space right now, as far as what you've been able to accomplish in this particular sport. Even though that wasn't necessarily our goal when we set out, just know that you're in a very unique situation. And with them being able to accomplish, you know, a Duke education and a Yale education out of the sport, you know, you really have to know that you're very blessed in that situation. So with them being able to, you know, recognize that, I think they're just the type of kids who want to be able to tell their story, because they know, they realize that there are kids out there that will be looking up to them. That's something that I've always kind of talked to them about, and you know, that you personally have a responsibility to those people. You know, both Cameron and Carter will, you know, any kid that talks to them on Instagram or whatever, they are happy to sit down and just, hey, this is how I string my stick. You know, this is what I do every day as far as practice, things of that sort. And they're willing to just help other kids. So for them, yes, it is a very unique situation. Now, with what they're, me kind of telling them or keeping those things, to tell them, keep those things in the back of their mind at all times, to understand the responsibility, you know, and don't carry it as necessarily a burden on yourself as a teenager. Just know that there are people out there that look up to you. So, with all of that, you know, I think they kind of learned a lesson. They understand their roles right now as being examples and ambassadors for the sport of lacrosse, as well as, you know, some kids that will definitely be looking up to them as minorities, things of that sort, to know, hey, I see the sport that nobody else in my community plays, but here are two guys over here that actually look like me, that have potentially, you know, made some great accomplishments, you know. So, yeah, this is achievable for me. You know, when my boys were getting into the sport, again, you know, kind of basketball, football players, when they went over to it, we were trying to encourage some of their friends to come on over to the sport, just give it a shot. I could see the excitement in my boys' eyes about how much they love the sport, what they were getting out of it. Some of the kids, you know, weren't really feeling the same thing. You know, they weren't willing to go out there and give up another sport for this. But the kids that did take that chance, they loved it also. And some of them have also given up, you know, other sports like basketball and football in order to try lacrosse out. So with all of that, you know, them being my boys, they understand, again, that, hey, I can really encourage some people. You know, with football and things of that sort, you have many, many other kids that's participating. Well, hey, here's a sport that could potentially, you know, you may be able to get some benefit out of, you may be able to achieve a level of education out of this that you wouldn't necessarily have in other sports, things of that sort. So give it a shot. And we're here to kind of help you and encourage you to do it. And I'll train with you. I'll do those things and help you, you know, feel comfortable on the field and get a little bit better. So with them, I think that's kind of helped them grow as people, in order to know that they do actually have a responsibility to the lacrosse community in order to be ambassadors and things like that.
Daniela, hearkening back to that experience that you cited of Chloe having a freshman come to her and share what is probably aptly described as a traumatic experience with you, I would have to believe that, you know, kind of racks you back on your heels a little bit. Did you feel like you had people that you could turn to for support and advice on how you wanted to handle that situation?
I didn't feel that there was somebody in specific I could turn to. I was honest, if I'm being completely honest, I was actually very hesitant to go to her parents, and I still actually have not talked to her parents about the situation, because I felt like I was extremely proud that the girls were handling it themselves. So there's, I mean, two teenagers, you know, looping in an adult and trying to take responsibility for that situation, and, you know, just trying to make it into a teaching moment is a lot, right? So that's a lot for two teenage girls to do. I mean, especially girls, they kind of just try to shy away from those things. So I thought that they handled it really well. The thing that I guess I was looking for was follow-up. We never got any kind of follow-up from it. I didn't feel like there was that support there for them in that sense. So when I think of follow-up and what that looks like, I feel like that's what we need to see and we need to push for to do better as a lacrosse community, is rally behind, stand behind these kids, let them know that they're not alone in these experiences, that there are people, adults, leaders that they can turn to. I feel like that's where there's still a gap. And in order to bridge that gap, when I think of just in general, you know, like take lacrosse aside and what as a country, what we see sometimes, I think there needs to be more voices that don't look like us. So more voices in the room saying, yes, I agree with exactly what they're saying, and this is what we need to do. More voices saying, instead of saying, hey, yeah, that's a tough situation, I'm sorry you went through that, saying, hey, this is what we're all going to do to make sure it doesn't happen again. That's where I see us taking it to the next level when I think of the sport, you know, in Houston, and what we can do to grow the sport within the girls lacrosse community in Houston, that we've got to make it a safe place for these girls. So in case they do experience something like that young lady went through, they've got the adults behind them.
And Jeremy, I mean, support and network is what Nation United was created to provide.
Yeah, absolutely. So Nation, you know, as the mission implies, we're here to inspire diversity in the sport, right, by creating an optics that may not have been available, you know, 4 years ago in the elite levels or at the elite levels of club lacrosse. But, you know, if we look down the road here, or we look at where we are now, and, you know, the Nation United Foundation, you know, its purpose is to support diversity in the sport. And so, you know, when you hear Daniela mention that we need to take ownership, and you know, one of the things that we want to do, and that we are doing, some of it through our own programming, some of it through partnerships like the one that we have with Inside Lacrosse and through our sponsors with now, of course, most recently announced Adidas and some of the other sponsors that we have, is to leverage their platforms or, you know, in order to help one initiate or continue discussions that are relevant to the topic of diversity and inclusion and cultural awareness and inclusiveness and bias and so forth, but then also to introduce tactical approaches that people and organizations within the lacrosse community, stakeholders, whether you're an athlete, a parent, if you are associated with the sport, you can implement, as part of your solution or your role in being responsible and being accountable for helping to what we perceive to be help make the sport the best sports community that it can be, period. And one thing that I'll mention, I'll give an example for, you know, real quickly, is just, you know, this notion when we talk about kids being called the N-word. We talk about that a lot because it's, you know, front and center and it's associated with race. But there are other, you know, slurs that we hear associated with, you know, where a kid may be from, or, you know, or live, rather, what side of the tracks they're on or from. Or even, you know, if they're perceived to be, you know, a homosexual, you know, slurs happen. They show up in these competitions as if they're part of the game, right? Trying to get in the other person's head. When in all actuality, you know, what you're doing is creating a wedge on the field and also off the field. Now that kid that you called, you know, the N-word, or you call, you know, whatever homophobic slur you could think of, that kid can't look at you and shake your hand at the end of that game, as we all do, right? Or as the athletes do at the end of these games. And so it kind of creates these wedges and a breakdown in the brotherhood or the sisterhood that has historically existed in the sport, because the sport ultimately is going to continue to become more diverse, and it will ultimately continue to become more diverse at the elite levels. And the brotherhood and sisterhood, the familial aspect of this sport, is what has, quite honestly, for a lot of individuals, made the sport attractive, right? Having that fraternity or that sorority. And we want that to continue, but we've got to be forward thinking, you know? And so when those things happen, there should be quite honestly, there should be a no tolerance rule. You know, from a referee's perspective, they should have the ability to eject a person. And I'm just going to put it out there, right? From a game with no question that they hear those things happening. And right now I don't know if, you know, the rules, I know that there's some written rules, but I've never seen even with my son, as recently as, you know, him being at Macaulay School, right there in Tennessee, you know, during a playoff game, he was called the N-word, and nothing happened to the young man who called him the N-word, you know, and there was no discussion about it outside of the 2-minute discussion that the referees had, you know, with one another, and the game went on, and the kid, you know, he was added back to the field. Those things create doubt in the minds of the athletes who are trying to enter the sport and become a part of the larger community. And so we just have to be cautious and careful of those things, and know that we all have a role to play in addressing it.
So, Kobe, Jeremy laid out a couple ideas for tangible steps forward. Is there anything else that you would like to see in terms of what would represent progress for creating an environment that, as a parent, you either individually feel more welcomed or more supported or more included, or you see that for your sons as athletes and players?
Yeah, I think, just in general, in particularly today's political environment, things of that sort, we just have to take it upon ourselves as parents, both white and black, and just say that we're not going to allow that to go on, not allow that to happen. Sometimes we're tolerant when we hear those things, and even if our own kids do those or happen to do something like that, and if we took it upon ourselves, not only the referees, but also the parents, as well as the coaches, and say, hey, look, if I hear anything like that, or there's any insinuation that you've done, something to hurt someone on the fields or whatever, we have to be willing to step up and take it upon ourselves and enforce the rules and help to create rules both from both sides. Because, of course, if you only have one side that's screaming about this or whatever, nothing's ever really going to be done about it. So if we, as a community, take it upon ourselves to begin enforcing those things, then, we'd move much, much further down the road that we're trying to get to. So I think that's the first step. And just, overall, even, with the, I think it was the situation in MLL where Lyle Thompson, a commentator said something about cutting his hair or whatever, immediately I think the lacrosse club should have taken action and not allowed that to fester for a few days without issuing some sort of apology or taking some action amongst, inside the organization. If we were to do that, I think the sport would move a lot further to promoting diversity in the sport. And, it's very difficult for me to try to pitch this sport to another kid, and he knows that the possibility of him being called an N-word or being, something derogatory happening while he's on the field and nothing being done about it. It's very difficult for me to expect him or her to want to accept that and play the sport. Now, even though it's a great sport, and everybody who I know that has actually tried it, they end up loving it. But as they hear about instances like this, and nothing being done, it's going to be very difficult for them to want to play or want to accept the community.
And certainly that's a substantial threat. And I think that one of the things I kind of want to hit on to end and summarize the conversation is the idea that there is definitely a balance. And I'm really struck by, Daniela, your comment that you didn't know what lacrosse was before Chloe started playing. And now 6 years later, it's giving her an opportunity to go to one of the world's most foremost institutions and compete at one of the highest levels that exists in the game. And so I want to end by asking, when you sit back and reflect on that arc, how remarkable do you find it to be?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like, so she's played for 6 years now, and it's just been something that has gone by so fast. I think I said that earlier. It's been truly remarkable, and I'm extremely proud of her and just the person she has become through this sport and just growing, as a young adult. So I think we spent the first few years, this was before the recruiting rule was in place, we spent the first few years just playing catch up. And she saw girls getting recruited and said, I want to do that. And it was just kind of a hustle in a short period of time to get to that level for her, right? She was very fortunate. People saw the potential there and said, okay, you may lack stick skills in this, but you're pretty fast, you're athletic, we can work with this. And that's ultimately how she ended up at Penn. She was a good player, but she definitely still had a lot of room for improvement and still does to this point. So I think lacrosse has been an a great vehicle, like Colby mentioned earlier, to play at some a great school, get a world-class education, have a sports experience on top of it. And I think for her, once she committed and once she realized, oh my gosh, I'm going to UPenn, she then saw herself a little bit differently. So in Houston, prior to Chloe, and over the past, or I'll say in Texas in general, she's had some girls to look up to. Taylor Thornton comes out of Dallas. Amanda Lovell comes out of Houston, and she went on to play at Princeton, just graduated. And there was another young lady that played at Stanford. So when Chloe was like in seventh and eighth grade, she had those people. And she was like, wow, black girls can play lacrosse and do really well. Like, I want to be like them. Once she committed, she realized, wow, now I'm that girl, right? Now people are looking at me. What can I do with it? We've always had those conversations on how, like, you're given this opportunity. It's what are you going to do with it? Outside of just 10, you're given this opportunity to influence other girls that look like you, to look up to you. So I would say the past 2 years, she has spent it trying to find ways to encourage girls like the freshmen, to play and really take them under her wing and say, we can do this too. And getting on the Nation United team, it has been one of her biggest lacrosse blessings. I will say that. I think Nation United does an amazing job in bringing a diverse group of girls together. It kind of feels like home to them. It really does. And they've only met a few times, and they all clicked so well. It was kind of an exhale moment for them, I felt like. They then go on to their respective cities and their ambassadors, and they truly are, right? So there's now these girls all over the country that are ambassadors for the sport, ambassadors for diversity and inclusiveness in the sport. So just her work through Nations United, it also fueled her when she got back to text her coach that is a club coach here in Houston and said, I want to train girls. I want to train young girls that may not have the money to spend on training or to go all over the country, and I want to train them for free, like give them my number. So she's started doing that, girls of all ages, just to get them motivated, to get them to catch up like she had to catch up, because it's hard. Being in Texas, we don't get the camps. We don't get the level of coaches. Coaches are few and far between, right? So we don't get big-name coaches coming here to even work in the local scene. So it is a game of catch up for them. And I think this past 12 months, she's really taken ownership of, like, I want to create other Chloes. And she's had other girls that she's looked up to, and she just wants to spread that as much as she can. And I think that's what we all need to, all of these kids need to take advantage of that opportunity to help grow the sport in that way.
Well, Jeremy, Daniela, Kobe, really appreciate your time on the Diversity Inside Lacrosse podcast with Nation United. It was certainly a lot of lessons well learned, and look forward to talking to you again sometime down the road.